He's got a beautiful backswing.
Dad, oh, he got all of that one.
Oh my gosh.
That is amazing.
Layup with an iron into the hazard.
Oh my God, you had to deal with the golf course people too!
Well, that wasn't quite what I meant, you know?
Welcome into another edition of the 73rd Hole. Colby Powell and Taylor Williams with you to preview what is certain to be a phenomenal golf tournament this week in the Dominican Republic, the Corrales Punta Cana Resort and Club Championship. We will get to that on the other side of the break. But first off, that's not even the best event that we have this week. The best event that we have this week was played yesterday in Missouri at Payne's Valley. Tigers' first public course design in the United States. Taylor, the Payne's Valley Cup, I thought, was a huge hit. The golf was great. The format was fun. The course was unbelievable. I think 10 out of 10, five stars, Payne's Valley Cup, very well done.
Yes, yeah, there's hard to pinpoint anything that really went wrong for the event, whether you go with the coverage or whether you go with, I mean, you could say the play was hit or miss, you know, it seemed like, especially early on, the guys had a little bit of rust and were trying to get their swings figured out a little bit. No one really came out, and you were watching like, oh my God, that guy's playing out of this world. So, I mean, when you look at it from that aspect, it may not have been the best show to watch, but at the end of the day, the views that you get to saw, you got to see from the course, the fact that we know that it's a public course and that we can, what are we, Colby, about four and a half hour drive from here to there?
Or is it even that? Yeah, 4.5 probably. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, we can eventually plan a weekend out of it
and go. I mean, from here, if you really had the want to, you could make a day trip out of it.
I mean, we could get up early, go play, and then come back.
Noon tea time, you leave here at 6, be back at 10 o'clock at night. For a long day, though.
From the way they were describing in the podcast, or not in the podcast, during the broadcast, yeah, and they kept saying, they said it like 3 or 4 times, like, now I'm not plugging this place here, but, you know, it's super, and I'm like, yes, you are, you're plugging the damn place, quit lying to us. But from what they said, you know, they
said, Gary Player, after he talked it up, he said, Johnny Morris said he'd give me 10%.
Yeah. And they're all probably getting something to that 0.1%, 10%, whatever, depending on how big of a name it was that said it. But it seems like that they got, you know, the spa, they've got restaurant, they've got essentially the whole 9 yards. When you don't need to think of a golf course, you think of a golf resort. And so I think that's why maybe not even a weekend, maybe even a week trip, just not even just because of Payne's Valley, but we know there's so many other great
courses. There's 5 golf courses on the property at Big Cedar Lodge, and they are impressive. Ozarks National is up there, Top of the Rock, Jack's Little Par 3 course. Gary's got the 13-hole course up that sits on top as well. So, yeah, there's a lot of good golf up there.
Yeah, that you could, let's put it this way, we talk about making a day trip out of it, and there's only 24 hours in a day, so it'd be hard to get all that great golf in. And especially, like I said, I think that if we were trying to get up there, I think that not even just the golf course itself, but just everything that seemed to go along with it, I think makes it a great place. When it comes down to,
and you can take the wife, because it's only about 10 or 15 miles south of Branson, so you can go play golf during the day, and then you can go see a show at night. It's perfect.
There you go. Oh, there's so much to do.
Win.
Exactly. Everyone wins. And so I want to get your take on the course, Colby. I mean, obviously it was gorgeous. We could see the views that it had, like you kind of sit on top of the mountain. Kind of what we expected. Will seemed like pretty big fairways. They even Payne's son made a joke on the
Aaron
first
Stewart,
tee. Made a joke about it on the first tee, which technically ended up not being a joke. It was about as true as you could get.
And then he hooked it into the Ozarks, which is exactly where Tiger hooked it off the first hole.
Yeah.
So and Justin Rose put one in the Ozarks off 3. So we're in Oklahoma City. It's where we live now. It's where we're recording this podcast. We're from Chickasha. It's about 45 miles, and that's about the width of the fairways at Payne's Valley. Unless you have a two-way miss going, or unless you line up to play a fade and you accidentally double-cross it, boy, it is hard to miss a fairway on that golf course.
Well, it just from the tuck, I mean, obviously TV can be a little bit skewy, but what it looked like was that huge fairways. I mean, we're talking 60, 70-yard wide fairways.
Bunkers, strategically placed bunkers, and we saw them find them a few times.
Yeah, and so you had the bunkers, then what it looked like to me, Colby, was there wasn't really a first cut of rough. It was just like all second cut.
Yes.
Like if you were in the rough, but the second cut wasn't extremely penalizing.
But on the longest drive hole, Rory was further up there, and Rory, there actually was a tiny little bit of a first cut, but it was mown so closely to the actual fairway cut that you couldn't even distinguish it until they zoomed in on Rory's long drive, because he was not in the primary rough. He was just in the little first cut, but they said he wasn't in the fairway, so he didn't qualify for the long drive, so it went to Tiger. So it was there, but it wasn't even noticeable unless they zoomed in, because it was mown so closely to the actual fairway.
So, and for what it looked like on the second cut was, and you saw it sometimes, like I think it was Justin Thomas, maybe twice, and maybe another player in there, where like you know, when you roll up onto a green and that you have the fringe behind your ball and you can't make a backstroke because of the fringe, it seemed like there was some of that on the fairway where the ball rolled up like on the rough line, and it was like the player would have to maneuver.
Yeah, I know JT had that happen on a hole in the alternate shot, 9 or 10 maybe.
Yeah, so that's the reason why it looked like there wasn't really a first cut, is because of that premise,
right?
And because it looked like it just runs. So, but even then, we made the analogy during the U.S. Open recap that we had on Monday that it didn't necessarily look very thick. It just looked, you know, about, what was that, about a couple inches long.
2 inches thick, yeah. Yes. 2 inch thick rough, not terrible.
And
we saw Rory chip from off the side of number 10 whenever Rory just couldn't find. No, it wasn't off the side of number 10 because it was in the singles matches. So it would have been 16, 15,
yeah.
The par 3.
Was it the one that he lipped out or almost made, and after he had already had a couple lip
outs? It was after he lipped out two putts in a row, and then he chipped it up, and it stopped right on the edge of the hole, and then he lipped out again on the next hole. So that was four holes in a row where he lipped out three putts and then had a chip hang on the edge. So it was, I mean, it was beautiful stuff from Rory.
And I remember yesterday, we were planning on watching it, had some stuff come in, but nevertheless, I remember texting you, and then I'm like, man, these broadcasters are making such a big deal about Rory's lip pass. They should come watch us play a scramble, and then they would literally be blown away.
Because
take what Rory did for those four holes, and take that over the course of, what, three or four tournaments?
Yeah, because they're like, how does that not go in? And I'm like, you're preaching to the choir, buddy.
Dude,
you are preaching
that
to
is
the
literally
choir.
Every other hole for us. So, but nevertheless, I thought that was really funny. But yeah, getting back to the course, I mean, wide fairways, and we saw it. I mean, it's one of those places to where it's not like you can hit it 300 yards offline and go find your ball. It's wide fairway, a little bit of rough, and then if you miss it, you're off the side of the cliff. Which, I mean, if you hit it 200 yards offline, you might as well go up there. And I don't know if it's playing hazard or lost ball. I'm not sure what how it will be played.
I know Rose reteed on 3, but I don't know if Tiger.
I don't think
re-teed.
That. But I know the Rose on 3. That one didn't even look like it cleared any land though.
Yeah, I think if you went and played with your buddies, you'd probably play it as a lateral. I think that's how most people will play it. But I don't know if it'll actually be marked red. I think that'll be something in the group you'll determine on the first tee box. All right, we re-teeing or we playing as a lateral? Because if you go play with your buddies, inevitably a couple golf balls are going to be lost. And that's just a more friendly way to play the game, not making people have to re-tee.
One of my questions, too, I have, Colby, is that, so if we go up there and we play and we keep score, are we keeping a 19-hole score? Are we keeping just our 18-hole score? How does this work here?
I was actually thinking about this yesterday, and I think I've got the perfect system. I think you have a bet for the 18-hole match. That's what you do. Like, you know, if we bet Canes or $20 a man or whatever we bet, you have your 18-hole bet. And then at the end of that 18 holes, you add it up and you see if somebody won the bet. If somebody won the bet, that bet's over. And you do a new bet on the 19th. So on the 19th hole, you go double or nothing.
So the 19th is basically an automatic press.
Yes, you go double or nothing on the 19th, but if the match is tied after 18, then you just use 19 as a tiebreaker. Yeah. You just have one more hole to play. I think that's the perfect way to do it, because you can't just go play the 19th for fun. You got to have a little something so that whenever you're hitting that gap wedge, everybody... I mean, it's not like you're punching a little 50-yard shot in there. That green's only 30 feet wide, 40 feet wide, and you're coming in from 120 for, I mean, even single and certainly double-digit handicaps, that's going to be an intimidating green to hit.
Well, I don't know if you saw it, Colby, but you could tell from when they showed the overhead view, they weren't playing the back tee box.
No, they were not.
There was at least one, maybe even a second one back there. I bet it goes back to at least 150.
I think it goes back to probably 140. Yeah, it might go back to 150, because they were playing it at, what, 120?
123 was the yardage, but it was kind of a backish pin. It wasn't
It was all the way back.
So maybe 140 the middle, 150 back, maybe somewhere along there.
Maybe
it is kind of a deeper green though. At least it looked like it.
Looks a little more narrow and deep, and then you got that bunker in the front there. But I like that they just built the bridge going across. There's no land bridge, so you can't bail out to some land bridge. It is a true island green. I think it's awesome.
It is. So the reason I asked that is because, so like when we go up there and we play. Payne's Valley and we come back and we tell, you know, oh, what'd you shoot? How do you play? Do you say, well, so what was, is it 72?
Yes, par 72. So I would say I shot 74 and then I birdied the 19.
Yeah. So then you would say you shot one. So do you shot one under? Do you say you shot, oh, I shot one under, then I played the 19th and birdied. Like if you make a hole in one on the 19th hole, is your score two strokes lower to par than you shot on the 18? Or
I'm just
curious as to how do you keep your score here? Because
I think you just tell whoever's asking two separate scores. Like you tell them your 18 hole score because it's par 72. That's what we're using. And then you tell them what you did on the 19th. Because everybody now is familiar with the 19th. Yeah. Whoever you're talking about isn't familiar with the 19th, what the hell were they doing yesterday?
No doubt. Or then you have the flip side of it where let's say you go out and you play really good. Let's say you shoot a few under par. Then you hit it out in the water on the right. Little part. So then you say, oh, let's say you're 3 under, then you made a trip on 19. Well, did you shoot even par? Or did you shoot 3 under? Which one was it? And so I was just curious as to how, what would they, are you playing actually a 19 hole par 75 course? Or are we playing 18 hole par 72? Last hole is fun. I just think it'd be interesting to see not just us, but just people in general categorize how to keep score there.
Yeah. So I really loved, 18 and 19 coming back into the huge rock formation was unbelievable scenery. And what I like too is just so you're teeing off on 18 and you're going to the green. So to the left of, if you're looking at the green from the tee box to the left up there, I don't know if you saw it or not, but they had a walkway and a rail. So people can actually stand up there and watch groups come in on 18 and 19. If you just want to have a beer with your buddies and watch some people rinse it on the 19th, you can do that. And I think that's pretty cool because I think it'd be cool to finish your round and then go up, have a couple drinks with your buddies, stand out on the railing, watch people hit into 19, and you can cheer them if they hit the green. You can boo them if they go in the water. I think that'd be a ton of fun.
Well, I think, too, you see it a lot where you have, like, groups of golf buddies where they go on golf trips. For example, you'll get 10 to 20 to even 50 guys sometimes that go on a trip. So let's say all of a sudden you get 30 people going and you have, you know, 6 fivesomes. So then all the fivesomes that finish go up there, get your beverage, come watch down, and let's say you're playing for each group for a cash or whatever, and you're cheering on the other person, and then all of a sudden you all get done and maybe you can all play the 19th hole at once. I'm not sure exactly how they do that, if it's not, because that's another good question. Does the 19th hole come into the pace of play policy at the club?
That's a very good question, because you know the amount of pictures that are going to be being taken on the 19th tee box. I mean, everybody's going to be taking a picture with the 19th in the background, which there'll probably be a wait to tee off on 19, and that's fine. There'll probably be a wait anyway, because everybody's going to be waiting to go for 18 on their second shot, because from the members' tees or the blue tees, whatever you want to call it, it won't be that long. But even the rock formation on the right side of 18, man, that is so cool.
Well, and you saw during the broadcast, Cole, they started on this like two weeks ago or something like that, or they finished it like 2 weeks ago.
The 19th hole?
Yeah.
They said 2 weeks ago the 19th wasn't there, and you could tell the sod was freshly laid and slow. Also, I thought it was really cool that Jack and Gary both stepped up and just flushed it onto the green.
Yeah, and not even including Payne Stewart's son. None of them hit it in the water. That's pretty impressive.
Payne Stewart's son hit it in the water on his first ball.
Oh, the first one. Yes, he
first
did.
First ball,
yeah, right.
He took a mully, and he just barely snuck it on the green.
That's what it was, because they went up and they started to mark, and they started to yell four, and so they thought he hadn't hit, and then they were like, everyone was confused, and they're like, oh, yeah, he did hook it. So then, it made me forget about it. So, hell, that's why you give someone a mulligan.
Yeah, and Aaron Stewart's got a pretty good golf swing, but, I mean,
the nerves.
He's just not a pro, and, I mean, I'm sure the nerves were getting to him. I bet he's a good player just by his swing. You know, you go out there and you're hitting a gap wedge with Tiger Woods, Jack Nicklaus, Gary Player, Rory McIlroy, Justin Thomas, and Justin Rose watching, not to mention the cameras and the millions of people watching at home. I don't know if in that circumstance I would hit it on that green.
It would be tough to even hardly make contact. I mean, with that crowd. Yeah. And it didn't look like to me, Cole, kind of like we talked about before, where, you know, if you work out there, you might have privileges to go out and watch. It seemed like there was not a huge crowd by any stretch of imagination, but on at least a few holes, there was a good amount of people out there watching. So, you know, I'm not sure how they got to go out there, whether it be media.
I bet it was mostly media and employees.
Probably so.
Yeah. I'm sure there wasn't any just general public there. I bet that was media and employees.
No, absolutely not. Yeah, exactly.
But not just Payne's Valley employees. I bet like Big Cedar Lodge employees were told, hey, you can go out there. Don't get close to the players. Don't do anything you're not supposed to do. You know.
And there was the owner of Bass Pro Shops was there.
So
maybe he had some business executive. Hey, I got a business trip for you guys. Come on, come out with me. I got something for you. You know, so that would be a nice way to treat your clients.
By the way, the Johnny Morris attire, I mean, that is, you could dress up as Johnny Morris for Halloween. That was brilliant.
It
was
it was straight.
So on brand.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like, you can't be someone you're not, right? You got to have an identity. So if you're going to be the owner of Bass Pro Shops, you better dress like that, no matter if you're going down to the convenience store, if you're going to the very newly opened Payne's Valley.
Yeah, exactly. So I thought it was a blast. Tiger and JT end up getting the win. JT hit it closer on the 19th, so that was the tiebreaker. And the players being mic'd up was awesome. We learned a few things. One, Rory, big dominoes guy.
I thought that was interesting.
Rory and Erica are on a big dominoes kick right now, which that's what my wife and I get. We're by no means are we sponsored by Domino's on this podcast, but Rory's big dominoes guy. What else did we learn about the players? JT is poor, so he had to catch a ride home on Rory's jet.
Yep. Yep. I did hear about that. I thought we talk about golf, one thing, like how they actually prepare, I think is interesting. A lot of the players, Rory was talking about it on his putting, and you could see Tiger, he didn't really talk about it, but you could see it just from the visualization, how they're all picking a spot roughly 6 inches to 2 to 3 feet in front of their ball as their aiming target. And I think that's a really good tip for amateurs or for anyone out there who has trouble aiming the ball, because – and at the same time, you need to make sure you're aiming at the right thing that's 60. Right. You know, don't aim at something
Whether you're using the line on the ball or not. Because even if you're using the line on the ball, it's easier to line it up with a spot 2 feet in front of your ball and then roll it over that than it is to try to line it up, you know, a foot outside the right, and then you're kind of guessing on your start line. So, yeah, I think that's something most good putters would do.
Yeah, putters, and I even take it into the long game, Colby, because let's say, for example, you're trying to hit a 300-yard drive. Well, you stand 300 yards away, you know, everything looks smaller than it is. Yeah. So it's a lot easier to aim at something that's 2 feet in front of you. It's like Jack Nicklaus used to do it on all of his shots.
That's what I do on all that. I feel like most people I know do that on their full shot. Maybe I'm just assuming that.
I think a lot of good players do it. I think it's something that a lot of higher handicaps don't do.
And they probably don't even think to do it.
No. I mean, it's like, you know, like if you're shooting a 3-pointer, you don't look 2 feet in front of you and try to shoot over a magical piece of air in front of you, you know? So I think that it's just something that doesn't get relayed a lot. And I think that it's something that you can take into all parts of your game, because we've talked about how many other times on the show, Colby, that if you have one little thing wrong in your setup, it's going to mess all your swing up. I mean, it can do
If your line was messed up, you're done.
If your club's lined up wrong, your shoulder's lined up, whatever it may be, if you're not lined up at the target, your body is going to compensate some way to get that ball to go to that target. So to have your swing good, you better be lining up the right thing. And I think that's something that shows that even these great guys, these great players, they stick to the basics. You know, just make sure your alignment's right. You know, pick that little spot and just be natural with it. Be athletic. And I think that was one of the bigger things that stuck out. That was one. And you heard a couple other snippets, like Tiger asked Rose if he turned his body through on bunker shots.
Yeah.
And at the end of on 18, they asked who the best bunker player was, and they essentially all said Rose was the best bunker player. So I thought that was interesting. So there was a few other snippets in there, but that was the main thing that I took away from that, from hearing them, was that seemed to be a common trend between the players, was picking a spot pretty close to in front of the ball, and whether it's a putt, roll it over that, or a fuller shot, just make sure your club's lined up over that spot.
Yeah, I also enjoyed whenever Rory was going through his phases of lip outs. Every time he lipped one out, JT went and put his hand on his shoulder and said, "Boy, you hate to see it." I thought that was great.
And then he kept talking about the golf gods and how they were going to come back and get him. And it seems like the golf gods are more of a belief amongst the PGA Tour pros than we thought. Because even when we had Woody on, he said the golf gods only allow you to make so many feet of putts.
Yep.
And so that's something that we don't really think about, but is kind of out there, where they might not be superstitious, but they're at least a little stitious.
They're at least a little stitious, absolutely. Payne's Valley Cup was an absolute blast. Looking forward to getting up there and playing that golf course. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back on the other side, and we are going to preview a tournament so good, I can't even hardly believe that nobody's fired up for it. I mean, it's the Corrales Punta Cana Resort and Club Championship, Taylor.
And I know it. It's going to be a big event. But before we sum up the Payne's Cup, because this was supposed to be Ryder Cup week,
had
USA versus Europe. I will say it before we go to break. Go USA, baby!
Yep, USA.
USA! USA!
I think it should count as a Ryder Cup victory.
I think it should as well. And President's Cup victory as well.
Tiebreaker measuring on the 19th hole at Payne's Valley with only four guys playing should determine the Ryder Cup.
Well, JT was a hole 4 feet closer than Rory was.
He's 5 feet closer.
Six feet, whatever it was. It was a big 5 feet. So USA, USA.
Absolutely. All right. Coming up next, we preview the Corrales Punta Cana Resort and Club Championship. I wonder if they're going to let the actual club champion play this week. There are some names in this field that you might think would be a club championship down at Corrales. We'll preview that tournament coming up next. Stay with us here on the 73rd hole.
When something the size of a golf ball hits your roof, you need to call McRae Roofing. McRae Roofing is Oklahoma's designer roofing service specialist. For years, Jeff McRae and the experienced team at McRae Roofing and Exteriors have served fellow Oklahomans by helping them with their roofing needs. McRae Roofing uses only top quality materials and professional crews to make sure that each job is done right so it will give you the years of service, security, and protection you need from the unpredictable Oklahoma weather. McRae Roofing offers residential and commercial roofing, ventilation services, and custom copper designs. McRae Roofing is dedicated to exceeding the homeowner's expectations. It's not just a roof, it is your home's crowning glory. Call McRae Roofing today at 405-692-4000. That's 405-692-4000. Make sure to also visit their website at mcraeroofing.com. That's M-C-R-A-Y roofing.com. Don't get caught with a leaking roof. Contact McRae Roofing for your free inspection today.
Welcome in, rolling along here on the 73rd hole, Colby Powell and Taylor Williams. Reminder to everybody, go check out the 73rdhole.com. You can always find the link to the latest episode as well as some featured episodes. You can check out the course this week for whatever tournament they're playing on the PGA Tour, a little course preview for you, all that good stuff. And you can get in touch with us there. You can find our Facebook and Twitter accounts linked there as well. Instagram, find us 73rd hole, the 73rdhole.com. All right. Taylor, Corrales Punta Cana Resort and Club Championship. Strength of field of 62, which, I probably might have even guessed that it's lower than that. It's not a true opposite field event because there's no main event this week. It feels very much like an opposite field event.
It does, and whether it be from the Paynes Valley Cup we got yesterday or just we had the U.S. Open last week and had so much great golf before with the Tour Championship, BMW, with all these great players. And then even before that, since the return, we had so many high strength of field events because everyone was just getting out ready to play some golf. And I think now we're finally starting to see to where it's almost kind of like it was like any other normal fall would be, Colby, where the big names are kind of starting to take their breaks and recuperate after this long stint of golf. And it was supposed to be Ryder Cup week, and we didn't have that. So
they all just got beat to hell by Wingfoot. So
absolutely. And that is something that I think may play a factor into this. I was real in between on what to do. And the reason I say that is because I'm not sure how the people who played four rounds at Wingfoot, it's going to impact them, because whenever you play a tournament that's that mentally excruciating and that's going to put you through such a grind, you know, is 3 days long enough to recuperate from that? And for some players it is, for some players it's not. And whenever you're trying to look at players who did make the cut and went through all that, because traditionally you're like, oh, well, this guy missed the cut the week before, then he must not be playing very good. Well, in some cases it could be a blessing because they don't have to go through two more rounds of excruciating golf. And
so it's pretty obvious you're talking about Will Zalatoris.
Exactly.
Who everyone is going to be rostering this week, which is the reason I'm not putting him anywhere, is because I know, A, everyone's going to roster him. And then the reason you just said, he just had four excruciating days at Wingfoot, got himself a nice top 10, top 5 finish.
I think he finished 6th. I may be
T6
wrong.
T6 maybe. I think T6 sounds right for Will Zalatoris. And he's going to be a big favorite this week, a guy that everybody likes because he just played so well at Wingfoot. I think it might be hard to go 4 days at Wingfoot and then hop on a plane and go down to Punta Cana, par 72, 7,600 yard Punta Cana, and just try to birdie every hole. It's just a very much a mental flip from knowing that, okay, if I make bogey here, I'm still good. Just don't let it get away from me and make double. Turning that around to, boy, I can't par this hole. If I par this hole, we're really losing strokes here.
Well, you're going from trying to essentially birdie every hole to all of a sudden, like in the U.S. Open, where you're just trying to make pars and get by. And, you know, even some, like I've seen some guys throw out, like Adam Long has been a name that I've seen a lot of people pick, and he finished 13th last week at the U.S. Open. So, I mean, you know, there's other guys who fit the mold of the Zalatoris, but he is the biggest name out there because he played so well on Sunday and is a younger name and they showed the numbers. His ball strike has been impeccable, and that's the only reason I'm leaning on him towards the one and done.
You know when the last time he finished outside the top 20 was? Anywhere in the world. He's been playing primarily Corn Ferry.
No, let me hear it. I don't know.
February.
How about that?
He hasn't finished outside top 20 since February.
That's pretty good stat.
That ain't
there.
Bad.
No, that's really, especially played U.S. Open.
Played U.S. Open last week.
Playing all kinds of time. I mean, obviously, yeah. There was the 2.5-3 month break, however long it was, but to go almost was that.
I mean, still, it's almost October.
Exactly. So, yeah. You played some golf since then.
Even with 3 months missing, that's still 5 months that he's played tournaments and hasn't finished outside the top 20. So let's go ahead and get into DraftKings, shall we?
Let's do it.
All right. So let's go. You want to go top to bottom or bottom to top?
Let's go top to bottom.
All right, let's go top to bottom. So I'll get started with my most expensive. And like I said, it is not Will Zalatoris. I'm running out Sam Burns as my most expensive at $10,100. Sam Burns didn't exhaust himself at Wingfoot last week. 2 weeks ago at the Safeway, he had the Sunday 62. So I think he had the Sunday 62 and then a week to get himself right for this week. I do think at some point he's going to break through and win one of the smaller events. I like Sam Burns this week, so that's my most expensive. I'm going to roster him at $10,100, my most expensive on the week. So give me your top two. We'll snake this,
baby. We'll snake this, baby. Right before I do it, I want to read off Will Zalatoris. This is just since the return from the break. These were all Corn Ferry events except the U.S. Open, which was last week. So I'll go in U.S. Open backwards. T6, T2, T19, T5, T18, 6th, T14, T5, win 4th, T3rd, T6th.
That is how you doing?
That's since the return.
That ain't bad.
That's crazy.
Also, fun fact, trivia. Do you think he made more money with all those Corn Ferry finishes, or do you think he made more money last week?
It would have to be last week. The only reason I say that, I mean, he won one Corn Ferry event, so that was... I just don't think those other thirds and fifths would add up to be as much as a T6 last week, which was probably... Well, I don't know.
He made more money at the U.S. Open.
Did he really?
Yeah, he made more money at the U.S. Open.
I'm trying to think. So, Louis finished solo third. That was 800 and something. What was T6? 400 and something?
It was somewhere in between, like... JT and those guys got like 318, and then DJ got like 474. I can't remember if he was tied with JT or if he was tied with DJ.
So he was somewhere around there.
He either made 318 or 474.
I think he was tied with DJ.
If he was tied with DJ, then he made 474.
I think so.
He made nearly $500,000 at the U.S. Open, which is more than he made grinding out top 10 and top 20 finishes for 3 months on the Corn Fair.
I'm trying to
good
think,
for him.
I mean, if you win on the Corn Fair, I think it pays, but it's like 100 something. You know, it's right.
It's a good, really good check for guys who are trying to make it.
I'll take it right now. Yeah. You know, it's a good, I mean, that's a good 2 year salary for a lot of people. And so, all right, so getting back to DraftKings here,
I got Sam Burns. Give me your two most expensive.
My most expensive guy is when you're going on a field of strength of 662, I'm looking at a guy who is, I want a guy who's for sure going to get me to the weekend. And I can't think of another guy who is the definition of get to the weekend and make some money as Chucky Three Sticks.
So by the way, that means that we are both avoiding the three most expensive guys, who are Will Zalatoris, Corey Connors, and Mackenzie Hughes.
I just think when you look at those guys, like when we traditionally do a DraftKings lineup, the most expensive guys are your DeChambeaus, your Rorys, JTs, and I just can't validate spending $10,600 on a Corey Connors. There just seems like there's too much of a wild card in
there. Not enough value.
No, there's not. No. And it's you know, if there was one of the top, this is just to put it into perspective. There's one player inside the top 50 in the world golf rankings in this event. And that's Henrik Stenson, who hasn't really played well since Troon back when he beat Phil.
Yeah, hasn't played well since he played one of the greatest rounds of golf of all time.
Yeah, no doubt. And so, whenever you're trying to pick someone outside the top 50 in the world, no matter how great player or not, there's just, you can have an off week. You miss a couple putts here or there and get it done. And while someone like JT or Rory DeChambeau, when they miss a cut, you're literally like draw drops. You're like, wait, that guy's not on the weekend? It's shocking. And so whenever you get that high, I want someone who, it just seems like to me, there's no reason to spend $900 more on Corey Connors than Chucky Three Sticks, in my opinion, you know, just to build a lineup. And so my second most expensive guy is a guy who I picked almost every tournament that he's played, Colby. Give me Christoph Ventura.
Okay, what's his price this week?
$9,200.
So, okay.
So second most expensive. He's a little bit more expensive than you see, but in all reality, for how he's been playing and the strength of field, I thought he would be a little bit more expensive than this. But finished 7th at the Safeway a couple weeks ago, 37th at the Wyndham, 19th Barracuda. So he's been playing pretty well. And I've been riding it for so long. And whenever, like I said, when you're in low strength of field, just looking for guys who I'm trying to get the least amount of wild card as possible at the top, because at the bottom, you know, you're going to have to do a wild card just because that's the reason they're cheap in a lower strength of field.
Yeah. I mean, if you're cheap in this field, then you're cheap in this field for a reason. So, I like Ventura, obviously. Go Pokes, like that at 9,200. You totally whiffed on the guy at 9,300 though, who's going to contend to win this week. And that's Sepp Straka. Sepp Straka's played some really good golf since the restart. So at 9,300, I like him as my second most expensive. And then at 9,100 for my third most expensive, I'm going Pat Perez. Pat Perez has said time and time again that this is his favorite type of grass to play on. It's that paspalum grass that they have at like the Mayakoba and at the CIMB and places like that. Both of his career wins are on paspalum grass. Pat Perez has two wins. They're both on paspalum. So
there you go.
I'm very high on Pat Perez this week. He even said, maybe it was after last year's Mayakoba, maybe it was 2 years ago, that he said, whatever it is about this grass, I just love it. Whenever I come play this grass, I feel like I have an advantage. So I like Pat Perez at 9,100.
Is he going to be on one of your best bets?
Yeah, he'll probably be on one of my best bets, because also it's not like he just likes the grass. He's also coming in with some form. He top 10 at Safeway 2 weeks ago.
Yeah,
he did.
Finished ninth there. Yeah, I like absolutely. That. So yeah, you've listed off your two there. So now I will list off my next two most expensive. So a guy in a similar boat as Pat Perez is the next guy I pick. When I say similar boat, it's a guy who's a little bit older guy who used to be a better player than he is now, but how does the old Toby Keith song go? I'm good.
I ain't as good as I once was, but I'm as good once as I ever was.
Exactly. And so the guy I'm going with here, who actually had played fairly decent, you called him playing good a few weeks ago, Colby, and that's Charlie Hoffman, 8,900.
Yeah.
So finished 13th when you liked him at the Northern Trust, made the cut at the Safeway, didn't really play that well. A few weeks ago, finished 25th at the Barracuda. Even back in July, finished 7th at the Workday. So like I said, you're in a lower strength of field. You're trying to just find some guys who get the job done. And for that play and for all that, I like Hoffman at that value.
Just remember the stretch of like a year where Charlie Hoffman would go out and he would always lead the tournament after Thursday, but he would never finish top five, top 10.
Well, he played one of the, I shit you not, one of the best rounds of golf ever at the Masters on that Thursday. Do you remember that, Colby?
Oh God, he was unreal.
He shot 7 or 8 under, and the next best was 3 under.
I'd love to know what he finished in that tournament. I'd love to know if he top 10 in that tournament.
I'll have to go back and figure out what year it was, but
I
hate saying any misleading stats, but I believe it was the largest like strokes gain on a round in a major since they started keeping record of that. I may be wrong, but that just seems like to be what I remember. But nevertheless, we'll go down. And my next most expensive guy, Colby, is down in the 8,000 mark. And another guy who he's been hit or miss, but is a guy that I think...
I found it right here. Nailed it right off the top. I guess 2017. It was 2017 for Charlie Hoffman. He shot 65 in the first round. So that was his opening 65. So he was 7 under. He goes 75, 72, 78, finishes T22. And that was around that time. That's whenever he was doing the same thing, like the waste management, where he was coming out and he was just going nuts the first 18.
Does that show what the Thursday leaderboard was, Colby? And limping home,
it doesn't show the Thursday leaderboard. I wish I could sort it by that.
And you said it was 26?
No, here we go. It does. I can sort it like that. So he shot 65, second place after that first round. Any guesses? I could let you guess 1,000 times and you wouldn't guess.
I'm going to say 70.
69. Nice. I meant the player, though.
Yeah. Oh, the player.
Yeah,
oh,
the player who shot 69.
Oh,
that day.
God. I have no idea.
William McGirt.
How about that?
William McGirt. Charlie Hoffman and William McGirt were sitting atop the Masters leaderboard after Thursday 2017. 65 for Hoffman. Second best score that day was 69 for William McGirt. Hoffman was unreal that day. You remember, he just like made everything.
I know it was a cold, windy day, I believe. Oh, yeah. Or at least I know it was real windy, and it was just incredible to watch him play.
So now that we've given you our 2017 first round Masters breakdown, we'll get back to this week's event.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and both, and depending on the strength of field and how the tournament comes out, 2017 Masters may be more entertaining when it's all said and done. But now it's going to be good. Did I give out my 8,000?
You did not.
Oh, I didn't even say him because we got
Hoffman, so I need one more.
Patrick Rogers.
Patrick Rogers. 8, you are a Patrick Rogers machine.
Man,
you love him in these little events.
Well, I do, and the reason is it was one of my worst calls in a while. Was that probably about 4 years ago when he came out on the tour? It was right in the middle of when Tiger was coming back from his recovery.
Oh, I remember.
And I said, in a year's time, both Tiger and Patrick Rogers would be in the top 15 in the world. I was 1 for 2.
You were half right.
And guess who was not the other one in there?
Patrick Rogers.
I coming out of Stanford, such a great collegiate player, was the player of the year in college, set a lot of records at Stanford. And no good golfers ever went to Stanford to play college golf.
I can't think of a single one. Notre Dame, maybe?
Yeah, I think he's the best for sure. Yeah. And so, needless to say, setting all them records. And I think he's had some injury issues coming out. So maybe if he can get past that. The reason I just like it, you can just tell there's a lot of talent there, so much natural talent.
Oh,
and
yeah.
If he just
can, tall guy, long swing,
hits big a mile.
Hitter. Yeah.
And so if he can avoid the injuries and gets it clicking, he'll be rolling. So hopefully it's one of those weeks. Maybe it's just a man crush thing, but he has shown a little bit of decent form going into this, so I'm not completely off the wall.
Yeah. Another good Stanford name, Andrea Lee, graduated last year, two years ago from Stanford. Yeah. One of the top amateurs in the world. Watched her shoot 30 on the back nine at Carston. It was impressive.
That's hard to do.
She's making her way up the LPGA now. I think she was top 10 at the A&A Inspiration. So that's who I'm rooting for on the LPGA these days, if anybody was curious. Let's get back to the Corrales. It's amazing whenever you're previewing a tournament like this, how your brain just goes other places, because this tournament just doesn't do a lot for us. But let's see. What we got here next? So I just gave you Pat Perez, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I just gave you Pat Perez. So my fourth most expensive guy is $7,600, Rob Oppenheim. Rob Oppenheim has had some good finishes on this grass as well. It's a different grass. I'm all about the grass this week, Taylor. I think the grass is key this week.
It is. I'm telling you what, that is one of the more underrated things that you talk about when people, you see it all the time when people go, when you have the West Coast swing and you go to the Florida swing, all of a sudden people just stop making putts, or they start making putts, and you're like, well, why is that? Because it's entirely different grass. So I think you're on the right track here with your theory.
Yeah, so he likes this grass. I'm going with Oppenheim at 7,600. And then at 7,000, I'm going with a guy who's played decently well lately. He's flashed just a little bit. And again, once you get this low in this kind of field, you're kind of taking flyers. Give me JJ Spahn at 7,000 to come out and make the cut this week, and hopefully maybe top 25, something in that neighborhood.
Yeah, no, I like that. Is that your cheapest guy or second cheapest?
Second
guy?
Cheapest.
All right, so you got even more, one cheaper than that. Okay, all right, I like it. So I'll go with my two cheapest next cheapest guys. The first one is a little bit off of form, and my last pick, there is not one side of form to be shown. It's literally just not even a gut thing, just because I love him so much. So my second most expensive guy is a guy who played really well back at the Travelers and was a real hot name, and then people kind of forgot about him, but still has been able to make some cuts. Give me Will Gordon at 7,600.
Yeah, Will Gordon. Shout out Vandy.
Came out blazing there, then missed a couple cuts in the row. I think it was at that point we were in between to where, is he going to come out and be on cloud nine and play better, or is he going to come out on cloud nine and play worse because he's, you know, he got that status? And I think we saw him miss a couple cuts. You know,
I think he just expended so much emotional energy to get the status. The tank was just on empty.
It was, and you can only go so much longer than that. But since those two missed cuts, has made 3 out of 3 cuts. And so for 7,600 in a field like this, sign me up for that. And then my last pick, Colby, 6,600. Not one sign of form to be shown. Not one. Not one sign.
But I love it already.
I get down here, and I'm like, we got a strength of field of 61 or 62, and I'm about to spend $6,600 on a player. Who am I going to take? I'm going to take my hero. My hero. Oh, my idol.
The barn rat.
Give me Kyrodek Appelbarnrat.
Kyrodek Appelbarnrat.
6,600. No signs of form whatsoever. Has not, looking back, I don't think he's made a cut since Puerto Rico back in
God,
February.
The one Hovland one?
Yes, but I mean, he hasn't really played a whole lot.
Did you hear the podcast he did where he talked about how he had a second apartment he rented out for his shoes, and his wife thought he was cheating, so he had to go show her that the apartment was for his shoes?
I did not hear about that, but that does sound something like that.
His wife made him get rid of the apartment because he was paying rent on a second apartment because he had so many shoes that he needed a whole apartment for it.
One, I did not know Hovland was married, so that's something.
No, Appelbarnrat.
Oh, Appelbarnrat. I thought you said Hovland.
No.
Oh, Appelbarnrat.
I was talking about Hovland went in Puerto Rico, and then I transitioned back to Appelbarnrat.
Oh, yeah. Oh, gosh, dang it. that even adds him onto my list of being hero. Yeah.
I thought he was cheating. He's like, no, it's just for the shoes.
Yeah, he's up there with Randy Marsh from South Park and Fat Thor from Avengers Endgame as my list of idols. But nice. Yeah, going back on this, so since he has only made one cut since February, and that was T27 at Puerto Rico, so has missed 6 of 7 cuts. Not one sign of form there to be shown, but I'm just rolling with it because I love the man so much.
Yeah, I like it. So I'm going down to 6,800 for my cheapest. Guy who was friends with Tiger. I don't know if they still are. He used to get an invite to the little Hero World Challenge and some things like that. Hasn't played as well lately. Give me Anirban Lahiri at 6,800. Anirban Lahiri has not won on the PGA Tour, but he has won a couple times on the Asian Tour on courses that feature this same style of Grass. Give me the grass. Yep, we're going horses for courses. We're going ass for grass, if you will. So give me Anirban Lahiri this week on the Pass Palom at Corrales. So we'll give quick rundowns again from top to bottom. I've got Sam Burns, Sepp Straka, Pat Perez, Rob Oppenheim, JJ Spawn, and Anirban Lahiri. That is my full DraftKings lineup. Run yours down right quick.
Top to bottom, we are going, gosh dang it, staying in order. There we go. Charles Howell third, Checky Three Sticks, Christoph Ventura. So two OSU players, and then Charlie Hoffman, then Patrick Rogers, Will Gordon, and then my hero, Apper Barnrat.
Absolutely. I love it. All right, best bets this week. It's real simple. I'm not taking the guys at the top because there's not enough value for me to bet Will Zalatoris at 12-1 coming off a week at the U.S. Open. Corey Connors at 16-1. I can't do it. Those guys are the best players in the field. They're that high for a reason, but there's not enough value for me to actually think they're going to win a tournament in a field that really is just there for the taking. So I'm taking two guys for my best bets that I've had in that I have in my DraftKings lineup this week. I'm putting 20 on Sepp Straka at 50-1, and I'm putting 20 on Pat Perez at 70-1, and that's the one I'm going to be keeping a real close eye on because I think Pat Perez has a real chance to win this tournament. Form, he loves being down there in, you know, he's played well in Mexico, he's played well in Puerto Rico in the past, he's in the Dominican Republic, so he likes being down there in, what is that, Central America? Is that what that's called?
Not really. Gulf
that's
of Mexico.
Like Colombia, the Gulf area.
Caribbean.
Caribbean, yeah. So really like Pat Perez this week. And then I told you on Monday I'd give you a super long shot. So if you want to bet a super long shot, triple digits to one, why not throw out the Aussie, Cameron Percy.
Okay.
Just take a flyer. Yeah. I mean, he's 110-1 in this field for a reason, but he's played some good golf of late. So Cameron Percy, if you want a super long shot at 110-1. So that's my best this week. Just two guys, $20 a piece, Sepp Straka and Pat Perez. And hold on for dear life and hope one of them hit on Sunday.
Yeah, no, I like your Pat Perez pick there. I think that he's playing pretty good. And then, yeah, so even Cameron Percy, two of his last three tournaments finished in the top 25, finished 23rd at the Safeway and 25th at the Barracuda. So I think for, what was he,
110-1.
110-1, yeah, I think that's definitely worth throwing $5 or $10 on.
Yeah, exactly. So one and done picks, shall we?
I think we should. And
you running out different guys or you running out the same guy in both pools?
I'm going to run out the same in both, might as well. I mean, there's not... Like, the only reason I'd run out anyone different is just because if I had used someone who I liked. And so I'll just keep – I'll try to do the same because I like to keep it simple. I get too many names going on. I get all confused and I give myself a headache. So I'm going to go – and my only theory behind this because I really don't – it's kind of weird because it's such – with it being such an open field per se, with there not being as many great players – with me being in the standings of the one and done where I'm at to where they're still in the big pool, at least where there's, I'm not in the money yet, but there's still, you know, there's still tournaments to be made and still can make up some ground.
You can't pick the guy everybody else is picking.
This is my theory. So listen to this. So if I'm going to sum it up here, I'm picking Zalatoris for this reason.
I think that's a bad pick, but you explain your logic.
Okay. So this is what happens here, right? So if Will Zalatoris wins and 40 people out of 100 have him, 40 people are going to pass you in the one and done if you don't pick him, correct?
Yep.
Okay, so if 40 people pick Zalatoris, who's going to be the next most picked guy? Probably Mackenzie Hughes in like the 20s.
Mackenzie Hughes, Sam Burns, Corey Connors, one of those guys.
Okay, so my point being is that those guys are going to get picked maybe 15 times at most, by maybe 12. So if those guys win, you're not getting jumped near as bad, and you're staying more on put with everyone because the same guy that everyone picked is so low. Because if you're down where you, like, for example, like I'm in like 40th now and the top 15 pay. If I'm 40th and I don't pick Zalatoris and 40 people have him and 20 of them are behind me, all of a sudden I drop down to 65th. Well, now all of a sudden if someone picks McKenzie or even Mackenzie Hughes, who might be second most picked at 15, well, then all of a sudden 15 people may pass me and half of those may be in front of me. So my point being is that there's a lot worse that would come for me not picking Zalatoris and him winning as opposed to me picking him and him not winning because with so many people having him, you can't get past because winner isn't going to be picked that much. That's my theory behind it.
Fair enough. So I don't necessarily hate the logic. I'll give you two reasons why I don't like the pick. Number one, I think it helps you to not move down in the rankings. I don't think it does a lot to move you up because I think he's going to be way heavily picked.
Well, think about it. If we're in a pool, our pool has 100 people.
Yep.
If 40 people pick him, and that's a high number. I mean, if it's that much, I would be surprised.
I think it'll be that much. I think 40 people.
Okay, so even if it's 40, that's only 40%. So you passed 60% of the field.
True.
And two things. One,
my second reason is my big reason.
Okay, go for your second reason.
Well, my second reason was, I truly think, and this is just a gut feeling, we'll see if I'm right on Monday, I think this is going to be Zalatoris' worst finish of the calendar year.
So he has to finish worse than 20-something. That's a good pick, Cole.
I mean, I think he could finish like a T48 this week, something like that.
In all honesty, Cole, when I was looking at it, I thought the same thing. And it's like I said to you, I think that those Saturday and Sunday at a U.S. Open takes a lot out of you.
Well, not only that, I think the fact that he just had $500,000 hit the account, I think it's going to be a huge exhale for him. And I just think the grind that he's been on for the last 3 months, I think he's going to exhale similar to the way Will Gordon did once he kind of, you know, accomplished. Yeah. I think that we're going to see a similar exhale from Zalatoris this week. It's a total gut feeling. He's probably the best player in this field. He could come out and win, and I might look like an idiot on Monday. I just feel like the mental... I think that you have a certain amount of a mental tank, and I think his tank's got to be on E this week.
In all honesty, Kobe, I think you're right. And from what you're saying, it must be a Will thing, because Will Gordon, Will Zalatoris must be something in the name.
Where there's a Will, there's a what.
Exactly. There you go. I love it. That's why you listen on the 73rd Hole here for stuff like this. But that's just my... I'm going with... Like I said, I would not bet on him to win the tournament. I would not. But when you're in a field like this, when like your Cameron Percy, 110-1, would right. not shock me one bit if he won the tournament.
Right. It's so wide open.
So,
there's 150 guys. Seriously, there's 150 guys who can win this tournament.
And normally, when you're in a one and done pool, you get towards the end of the season, there everyone's used up numerous people, so there's a lot less people to be used. No one's used Will Zalatoris yet.
Nobody's used anybody in this field, I guarantee it. Yeah, maybe a Corey Connors at Texas.
Yeah, or an opposite field event, because we pick some of those right. weekly, who those right. guys are in there, so you may not have them. But it's just like I'm going off of what I said earlier, Kobe, where if there was maybe two, like three or four guys who stuck out to me and right. Zalatoris was clear the most and maybe one of those other three, then I might pick one of them. But when I know every single person is going to have a guy and there's no other guy who is a guy who could potentially win and move you up, it's almost like trying to hit a lottery ticket when you have... Like for example, in like you do a DraftKings lineup, you have your 50-50 pools, like where you put in $10 to win back 20, and no matter if you finish first or 50th, if it's 100 people, you get back the same amount of money. I'm kind of looking at it from that aspect as opposed to trying to hit a flyer and a winner, because if Will Zalatoris comes out and does win and I don't pick him, it puts me even behind more of the eight ball, as opposed to, the guy who ends up does winning, maybe three people have him picked, and right. then you don't drop down.
So that's a decent strategy if you're in 40th. I'm in 81st, so I can't use that strategy, because even passing 40% of the field does me no good. I've got to pick a guy who's going to be very low ownership, hope that he hits and wins the tournament, and then I can jump a bunch of people, because at 40th, you can afford to kind of just hold your ground a little bit. Maybe you pass some people and you get up to 32nd or something this week. Moving up from 81st to 73rd doesn't do me any good.
No.
So at 81st, I'm running out Pat Perez. I'm running him out in both pools. I've already said I'm really high on him this week. He's got form. He likes the area. He likes the grass. I think Pat Perez is going to be in contention. Didn't play Wingfoot last week. Played Safeway 2 weeks ago. I'm really high on Pat Perez this week. I really am. Maybe it's the hair. I don't know, but I like it.
It might be the hair. It's good stuff. And so you make a really good point there, because like you said, Pat Perez is a guy who's sticking out to you. Who's right. someone you look at.
You got to use strategy, though.
And who's yeah. someone who you really think can win the term. And for me, when I look down there, there's no one who, like, there's not a name I see where I'm like, oh man, I really think they're going to win the tournament. And so whenever you're in a pool like this, you know, calculate the risk reward from it. So like, say, for example, with Colby, if his Pat Perez does come out and win and we all have Zalatoris, he's going to move up, and there's only going to be a couple other people move up because you're the only one that have him. But then we flip the opposite side of that, where, for example, let's say I pick Perez too and he doesn't do well and Zalatoris wins. Well, all of a sudden...
Then you move down to 52nd or something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And there's all these other people that jump you and get ahead, where, you know, it's one of those things to where, like I said, it's a smaller field. The purse really isn't that big, a little over $1 million, I believe, for the winner. And so if there is a winner that sticks out and a lot of people have him, even that $1 million, it's going to bring you down. And even if everyone has Zalatoris at a solo second, and you don't have him, that's going to bring you down some.
I'll be having to root hard against Zalatoris this week.
Everyone's going to have him. No one's using him. And that's really my only logic with picking him, Colby, because deep down, I really don't think that he's – I'm really just hedging my bet, essentially, right. Because everyone's going to have him. I don't think he's going to – even if he finishes top 10 or 15, I just don't think that he's going to have that. I just think Saturday and Sunday of a major championship, especially U.S. Open, takes a lot out of you, especially for a young guy like that who has been battling on the Corn Ferry Tour for this long.
Yep, exactly. All right, good stuff. We got the Corrales Putacana Resort and Club Championship this week in the Dominican Republic. So should be a good tournament. Hopefully everybody plays well, and we have an exciting finish on Sunday. We will be back next week. Remember, head over to the73rdhole.com. Find all the latest links. Find us on social media, 73rd Hole, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Thanks for listening. Once again, we're back next week with more 73rd Hole.